All right. Well, good morning. Here we are, March 2nd. Woohoo. doesn't feel any warmer, but it's March. And so we're grateful. I'm grateful that it's March. It's out of January and February. That's what counts. They're behind us. Well, some months of March are pretty nasty, but we'll just go with the good stuff, see what happens. Since it's just the beginning, we can look for the good stuff, you know, warmer temperatures, you know, things like that. Yeah, get the air conditioner out. So, well, this morning we're starting a new unit, so the spring quarter, and title of the lesson is Prophetic Calling. And we have Amos, Habakkuk, and Jonah as the three prophets that we're going to look at this morning and their call. But for 7 weeks, we will be studying the 12 books of the minor prophet. And if you ever wondered, well, okay, what's a minor prophet and a major prophet? Well, it doesn't go with importance. It goes with length of the book. And so whenever I have a minor sermon, it's only 20 minutes long. And when I have a major sermon, it's 45. That's a joke. So the minor prophets are Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Jonah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk, Zephaniah, Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi. Now, these books are located in the Bible just after the major prophets. And the major prophets are Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel. Now, in the what we call the Old Testament, the books Isaiah, Jeremiah, the major prophets, they are each in their own individual scroll. But whenever you look at the minor prophets, all those books are written in one scroll. So that's why, you know, In the Old Testament, there were no chapters and verses. They were just long letters written. So, whenever you were reading about the, when you were reading about the minor prophets, they were just shorter, and they were all in one long scroll. So, whenever we look at the contrast between the books of Isaiah, Ezekiel, and Daniel. We find that, you know, again, they were longer books. They were books that they had in their own scroll. So the ministry of the 12 prophets, of these minor prophets, they ministered for over 300 years. It was from Amos in 760 B.C. to Malachi in 450 B.C. The books are chronological, that they follow one event after another. We find that Amos, Hosea, Jonah, Micah, Zephaniah, Nahum, Obadiah, and Habakkuk, they come before the Babylonian captivity. So when the children of Israel are taken captive into Babylon, we have that 70 years that was the interruption, as it were, of the children of Israel being in Jerusalem. And then, of course, after the captivity and when they came back to Jerusalem, Haggai, Zephaniah, Joel, and Malachi ministered after the return to Jerusalem. This week's lesson, Amos, Habakkuk, and Jonah, we are looking at their calling, how that they received their calling before the Lord. And so we'll be reading through that. Now, one of the declarations is that we are all called into ministry. We find that we are called out of darkness into His marvelous light. We are called out of darkness into His marvelous light. Where are we here? Every believer is called into God's service. We are called of Jesus Christ. We are called according to His purpose. We are called to be saints. We are called unto holiness, and we are called into fellowship with Jesus, and called into one body of Christ. So We each have a calling that we are responding to whenever we are. Rhonda, you want to get me a throat lozenger? So we have these callings then of our own life and how that we respond to them. So we're going to look at these three prophets and their calling and how that they responded. We have Amos chapter 1 verses and 1-2. The words of Amos, who was among the herdsmen of Tekoa, which he saw concerning Israel in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah, and in the days of Jeroboam, son of Joash, king of Israel, 2 years before the earthquake. And he said, the Lord will roar from Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the habitations of the shepherds shall mourn, and the top of Mount Carmel shall wither. So when we're looking at got them all there, dear?
There's like five.
I don't think I can use all five at once. But that's all right. Thank you. Yeah. When we look at the first verse there, the first two verses of Amos, they're packed with information about the prophet. We are told the name of the prophet. We're told his occupation. We're told the source of his words, his audience, his location in time, and the essence of the message to Israel. So whenever he starts his letter, he says, who I am, what I'm going to do, where I'm going, my message is to whom, and he puts it all out there in the first verse. I always tell people, well, years ago, it was, if you're sending out a message, you want to send out who, what, when, where, and why, okay? You want to give everybody the information in that letter that you're sending out. I don't know how many times you get invitations and they forget the date, or they forget the time, or who's it for? You know, it's like they're just common things. Who, what, when, where, and why, you know? Answer those questions and you'll fulfill the need of your invitation. So Amos then does that with this introduction. First, the book consists of the words of Amos. Amos is the only prophet in the Old Testament that is named such, Amos. There is another guy who is Amoz, A-M-O-Z, but no other guy has the name of Amos. And the word Amos means one who bears or carries. So it could signify that Amos was the Lord's messenger and he was carrying the message of God. So you know, whenever we look at the books and the scriptures, so often we just read over the you know, like when we read the text today, you know, we don't often stop and say, okay, Amos, he was a herdsman. Oh, you know, so we find that all of these things have important meaning to them, and but we just read them over and somehow skip what all that is about. But today we're going to look at what it means. So Amos was one of the herdsmen of Tekoa. Yeah, that's it. A herdsman had the responsibility of breeding his sheep. So he was more than just a shepherd who watched sheep. He was a herdsman who raised sheep. So he was in charge of then breeding and watching over his sheep, but he also would have been one of the contractors that would send his sheep to the temple in Jerusalem. So as a herdsman then, he was a breeder of sheep and then also a supplier of sheep to the temple. And one of the things that we have here is days of Uzziah, days probably, and what is it? Two years before the earthquake. Well, the third thing that Amos says, his words were something. I was looking for it. His words were something. There we go. The words of Amos, who was among the herdsmen of Tekoa, which he saw concerning Israel. So what he is saying or going to say are the things that he saw. So he had a vision. Now, so it is, you know, sometimes these, you know, this is what I heard. You know, I heard this of the Lord. Well, Amos says, I didn't hear this, I saw it. Okay? So he saw. He is declaring that they were given to him by divine revelation. He didn't make this up. He saw it. And so it refers to a God-given vision. Fourth, Amos' audience is specified. Well, who is he to be ministering or prophesying to? Well, after the death of King Solomon, we have the what we look at as the nation of Israel, which would be the northern Israel and southern Israel. And southern Israel was Jerusalem and Judah. The tribe of Judah occupied that. And the northern tribes, they all split. So, you know, they rebelled against the southern tribes. They did not want to go to Jerusalem. The northern tribes did not want to go to Jerusalem to worship. And so they set up their own king. And they, you know, so there's the tribe of Judah, and then there's Israel. Often whenever you think of Israel, we think of the entire nation. But now in that Amos is writing here, he's writing to, and he will find out that he was writing to, he himself is from Judah, but he is going to north, he's going north to the northern tribes, to Israel, and he's making his message known to them. Amos ministered during the time when Uzziah was king of Judah. So now we've got his time frame. And we know what time it was. It was 2 years before the earthquake. So we put all those things together so we can have a time frame of this guy. And so he's not a prophet. He's a herdsman. And you know, if you're into breeding and livestock, you have to be a person who understands the genetics. You know, today in the dairy herds, they are more interested in the genetics of the animal and who the sire was of the female and what combination of the desires of the female do you want to increase for the offspring of that cow. And so you will breed that cow with a different, with a bull that would bring up the offspring that you're looking for. So it's a genetic thing. Well, the herdsman, he would have been keeping record. He would have been an individual, I think, who kept records of what sheep, what rams, what were with what sheeps, and, you know, what types of lambs that they produced. So it wasn't just letting them run wild out in the fields. He would have had them arranged according to that. So he would have had to been a person who kept records. That's why I think that the first person, now the guy who wrote this commentary wasn't a farmer, so he didn't know that. I just thought I'd put that in there. I figured that out. Yes. Yeah, he is providing sheep for the temple, and you can't take a sheep to the temple that's not perfect. So if he has a lamb or a female ewe that is producing offspring that are not perfect, then it's a waste of time and a waste of grass. And so you don't want that ewe breeding with the last one it had. You want it breeding with another ram. And if it doesn't work, you get rid of it. So it's unprofitable. So I think he would have been, so that's, as you look at that aspect of it, that's why he has so much information in the first in the first sentence, is because he's putting down his information. He's an information person, so he's putting it there in the first thing. And sixth, Amos' message is summarized, although the book consists of the words of Amos. His words are also God's words. Amos declares, "The Lord will roar upon from Zion and utter his voice from Jerusalem." So God is going to speak from Jerusalem to the northern kingdom, to Israel. So that's what we have here in these first couple verses. So, and his voice comes from Jerusalem, from the Temple Mount. Now, again, the northern tribes, the northern kingdom, they don't recognize Jerusalem as the Temple Mount. They have their own place, and they have their own worship, which is a false worship, and, you know, idols and so on. So, verse 10. Then Amaziah, the priest of Bethel, sent to Jeroboam, king of Israel, saying, "Amos hath conspired against thee in the midst of the house of Israel. The land is not able to bear all his words." Now, Jeroboam is the king of the northern tribe. Okay? Amaziah is a priest of the Bethel, and he's a priest in the northern kingdom. So he's hearing the words of Amos, and he complains to the king Jeroboam that Amos hath conspired against thee. Okay, so what Amos is saying does not bring about repentance, but it's a conspiracy. Imagine that. Even back then, they had conspiracies. So, the land, he says, the northern kingdom is not able to bear his words. So, he's talking about our whole religious system. And he's not doing a good job. He's, you know, we can't bear up under this load. "For this, Amos saith, Jeroboam shall die by the sword." So, Amos is saying, your king's going to die by the sword. "And Israel shall surely be led away captive out of their own land." Not only is he going to die by the sword, but the northern tribe, the northern lands, they're going to be captured and they're going to be led away. "Also, Amaziah said unto Amos," okay, so this is the priest of Bethel, talking to Amos, who is the priest of God from Jerusalem, "O thou seer, go flee thee away into the land of Judah, and there eat bread and prophesy there." Get out of town. Go back to where you belong and prophesy over there in your land. Don't come up here and prophesy about us. We don't want to hear it. It's not going to happen what you say anyhow. "But prophesy not against any more at Bethel, for it is the king's chapel." Said the king's going to die, and they're going to be led away. And so the priest is saying, get out of town. We don't want to hear what you have to say, and stop prophesying against us. Go back to Jerusalem. And stay away from the king's chapel. Don't come up here and prophesy about your God. "Then answered Amos and said unto Amaziah, I was no prophet." Okay, so now this Amaziah has said all this about Amos. And then Amos says, hey, I want you to know something. "I was no prophet, neither was I a prophet's son, but I was a herdsman and a gatherer of sycamore fruit." So not only did Amos be a herdsman and, you know, breeder of sheep, he also was a gatherer of sycamore fruit. So he gathered fruit on the side as a side job. "And the Lord took me as I followed the flock, and the Lord said unto me, go prophesy unto my people Israel." So that's why I'm here. God sent me, and you gotta pay attention to what I'm saying. But of course, they didn't. And They kept, you know, they were saying God's, you know, he's just trying to destroy the country. He's upset that we split away from Judah, and he's trying to get us to rejoin, and we're keeping our own religion, and they can have theirs. We got our own king, and you got yours. Go back to Jerusalem. So then we have Habakkuk. So that's the message of how Amos gets his call. Habakkuk, look and watch. The burden which Habakkuk the prophet did see, O Lord, how long shall I cry, and thou wilt not hear? Even cry out unto thee of violence, and thou wilt not save. So Habakkuk sees a problem. He sees what needs to take place, and what he calls his message, he calls it a burden, because it weighed heavily upon his heart. You know, he had a burden for the people, and this took place before Judah, before the southern kingdom, and it took place before they were carried away into exile into Babylon. So he has a message that is heavy on his heart, and he wants the people of Judah. So this letter is written to the people of the southern kingdom, of those who worship in Jerusalem. And his message has a heaviness on his life, because he doesn't want them to be taken away or punished. But we know that Judah is, they've gone into idol worship, and they forgot the worship of God, and you know, things have just gone south, it's gone off track, and Habakkuk feels this message that he has to deliver it to the people. And so he has this message, but then he's challenging God, why don't you do something? Why do you show me this iniquity and cause me to behold grievance? For spoil and violence are before me, and there are that raise up strife and contentions. So I see all of this, and I see the strife and contentions that rise up before me. What good does it do to keep prophesying? Therefore the law is slack. He's telling God, your law is slack. When the law loses its effect, and the people continue to break it, and even more so. So the law is slack, and the judgment doth never go forth. Telling people, God's not judging the people for their wrong behavior. The wicked doth compass about the righteous. Therefore, wrong judgment proceedeth. So it seems like the righteous are being judged by the wicked, and the wicked are not being punished for their actions. Behold ye among the heathen, and regard, and wonder marvelously, for I will work a work in your days which ye will not believe, though it be told you. For lo, I raise up the Chaldeans, or the Babylonians, it's the same group, that bitter and hasty nation which shall march through the breadth of the land to possess the dwelling places that are not theirs. They are terrible and dreadful. Their judgment and their dignity shall proceed of themselves. So we have here Habakkuk is the watch. He's the guy that says, look among the nations and watch. So he's looking, and God is telling him that the Chaldeans, the Babylonians, are going to come, and they're going to conquer the city. And that is going to be the punishment that comes upon Israel, on Judah, for their lack of sticking with the commandments of God and doing the sacrifices in the temple. Then Habakkuk vision in verse 1 through 3. Isn't that what we just read? Habakkuk 1 through 11. Oh, Habakkuk 2. Excuse me. There we go. 2, 1 through 3. Yeah. Just overlooked that one word, that one two. That one two. That two. I will stand upon my watch and set me upon the tower. Now, we don't know. In the city, they have towers, high towers in which they are able to overlook the battlefield. They're able to look, you know, they're watchmen who are looking for an approaching army. Now, an approaching army in those days would take days to get there, you know, because they would have to come, set up camp, you know, get all the army members in place and the siege towers and everything. They'd have to build all those things, get everything in place before they would come against the city or against their walls. So Habakkuk is either literally in one of these towers or he figuratively, and I will watch to see what he will say unto me and what I shall answer when I am reproved. So I'm going to be the watchman and see what happens. So the Lord spoke his instructions to Habakkuk. He says, write the vision. So the Lord answered me and said, write the vision and make it plain upon tablets. Now, one of the things that he's doing is write the vision upon tablets. That meant that it was not a temporary vision. It was a permanent vision, like the Ten Commandments were written on a stone. So when God's telling Habakkuk, you write this vision, but just don't put it on paper. I want you to write it on stone so it's plain to see, and that upon tablets, that he may run that readeth it. So even whenever a person is running through the town or the streets or the different communities, running through there, that people are able to see and read the commandment or what God has said is going to take place. For the vision is yet for an appointed time. This is what is important. What God has is for an appointed time. Now, we look at our world, and we say, okay, we know that Jesus is coming back. We know that Israel is a nation. We know that the Middle East is going, you know, that there's going to be war there. We know that Europe is going to have an Antichrist, or one world leader. And so we see all these things going on, but guess what? It's for an appointed time. So it's coming. We don't know when, but it's coming because it's for an appointed time. And so that's what God is saying here to Habakkuk. This is going to happen at the appointed time that the Babylonians are going to attack Israel. But this vision is for an appointed time, but at the end it shall speak. Not a lie, though it tarry, wait for it, because it will surely come, it will not tarry. So don't get upset. The vision will come, and it will not tarry. So that's what Habakkuk receives from God. And then we have our wonderful friend Jonah. I see how much time we got here. All right, Jonah chapter 1, 1 through 3. The word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry against it. You know, one of the things that this is the first time a prophet has been called to go to a foreign country and prophesy against it. Okay? Now, the Ninevites, they were vicious people. All of Israel's history, like the people on the outskirts of the nation of Israel, were often raided by the Babylonians. And they would take them captive, kill them, put them on spikes. I mean, they just would just horrendously torture them and, you know, rob them and take their goods back to Babylon. So they were a very ruthless group. And arise and go to Nineveh, the great city, and cry against it, for their wickedness has come up before me. But Jonah rose up and flee unto Tarshish from the presence of the Lord and went down to Joppa. So what does Jonah do? He doesn't like Babylon. He doesn't like these people. And Jonah had just ministered somewhere, and the whole place repented. So God relented on his judgment that was going to go against those people. So Jonah, after coming through a successful ministry, as it were, now has a declaration, go to Nineveh and prophesy against that. Well, he doesn't want these people to be saved. He doesn't want God to relent. He wants them punished and he wants them destroyed. And so he's not going. You want to make God laugh, tell him you're not going. I got a better plan. So he went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. And Tarshish is the exact opposite. If you're in the nation, in the country of Israel, Iran, or Iraq, they're off to the right, and that's where Babylon is. And Tarshish is over by Greece, Spain. So it's a complete opposite direction. So he paid his fee there and went down into it and go with them into Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Well, we know that when God has a plan, Jonah became the first prophet commanded to travel to a foreign people. I've already said that. And it is Iraq. It is across the Tigris River near the city of Mosul. And there is a, I've seen some of these documentaries on Babylon and so on. And there is a curse against Babylon that no one will inhabit the city of Babylon. It will be inhabited by wolves and jackals and other things. And to this day, around the walls of Nineveh, which on the outskirts of the city was where Saddam Hussein built his palace, it was right there overlooking Babylon, the city. And in that city, there is not one house. Not one house. You know, they build houses, they build them out of bricks and stuff and move it. No. There's no one that lives inside that area. Isn't that something? That's one of the prophecies. And, one of the other things, that whenever the word of the Lord came to Jonah a second time, so Jonah, whenever he's in the belly of the well, he has a change of heart. He's in the belly of the well, and if you read, I think it's chapter 2 or something, that he talks about how that he is in the depths of the ocean. Well, you know, how does he know he's in the depths of the ocean? Well, I know from what people say is that the deeper you go, the more pressure you feel, you know. So the pressure that he would have felt in the belly of the great fish would have been tremendous. So he would have been squeezed, as it were, in this pressure cooker, this pressure of this belly of this animal, and it was there that he says, "Yet I'm going to praise God in the temple." He repented and he goes back to he's going to go to Tarshish. Now, one of the tablets that they found in Nineveh, they had a the king would have a ledger of everything that happened every year, and it was entitled by one of the leaders that was in the court. And so these tablets were found in the early 1900s, and it was just in the last few years they were reading them. And in reading these tablets, they saw where there was a eclipse of the sun. And so they went back in the astrological calendar of Nassau, and they found when there was going to be an eclipse of the sun over Nineveh. And it is thought that that happened when Jonah goes back to Nineveh to preach the message. And what happens when he preaches the message? Everybody repents. Why? Because he looks like a decayed person eaten alive in the acid of a fish? Or he also, there was a sign in the sky in which the sun darkened and the whole place went dark because there was a message from God and Jonah was preaching about God and they all repented, including the king. The whole city repented. The exact opposite of what Jonah wanted to happen. So the second time, arise, go to Nineveh, the great city, and preach unto the preaching that I bid thee. So Jonah arose and went to Nineveh according to the words of the Lord. Now Nineveh was an exceeding great city, 3 days in journey. So the city was humongous. Now there are walls around the city, but the city extended way out beyond them. And the river goes right around the walls of the city today. It's, you know, the river's still there. And no one goes in there. And the Tower of Babel is there. And they have like the foundation of what they consider would be the Tower of Babel. And so it's all in there. And there's nothing, nothing in there but wild animals and what's said in the Old Testament. So arise, go to Nineveh, the great city. The Lord at first had spoken about the wickedness of Nineveh. Here he did not mention Nineveh's sin. He ordered Jonah to preach the message that I will tell you. So Jonah didn't have he didn't know what he was going to say until he got there. And then when he got there, he says 40 days and God is going to destroy this place. And while in that time period, the sun, perhaps, this is not documented because I don't know the exact time that Jonah was there. We know the exact time that the eclipse was there, but perhaps the eclipse happened and Jonah's message was verified by the sun and the eclipse and the message, and the people repented in sackcloth and ashes, and Jonah was disappointed. So that's Jonah's calling to Nineveh. That was interesting. Right, Jim? I'm glad you hear it. Right, Betty? Oh, David. I'm lucky I remember my own name. It's Glenda. Oh, geez. Sorry. Huh? Betty. No. Yeah, it was a joke. It was a joke. Why would I say I didn't have a joke? Well, any other questions before I make a bigger fool of myself? I can remember this stuff sometimes, but anyhow. Any questions, any thoughts? Sheep herder and an athletic swimmer? and I don't want to go. All right, we'll close. Father, thank you for blessing us. Thank you for your word that speaks to our lives, and we are so grateful. So grateful that you watch over us, and thank you for the enlightenment of your word and your spirit. In Jesus' name, amen.